I think one of the important things too that I learned through my working was that I really didn't know where I wanted to end up, but I knew it was fashion.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Not everyone begins as an entrepreneur. Most of us began as someone else's employee. But I've noticed something common among the people who go on to become successful entrepreneurs. No matter what they were doing in the early part of their career, they were always out hustling their peers. They always put in more effort. And that's because they understand the value of work. If you're proactive while working for someone else, you'll learn more about a business. And while you might not be getting paid more money for taking on new tasks, the knowledge and the insight you gain will pay major dividends for you later. So let me introduce you to someone who knows this well. Her name is Amber Venzbox, and she's the co-founder of the billion-dollar company RewardStyle. As you heard her say a minute ago, Amber began her career by raising her hand and taking on different jobs to learn as much as she could about different areas of the fashion business. In her first job as a clerk in a small store, she helped the owners with PR, branding, marketing, and more. And then she kept doing things like that. By the time she was ready to launch her own company, she'd done basically every job in the retail business. She knew how every element of it worked. I wanted to learn where that drive came from and how Amber maximized every learning opportunity. So I headed down to meet her in Soho in New York City while she was in town during Fashion Week. I was really excited to meet with Amber because she's really built her career from the ground up. She, like so many people, started without any connections or any contacts. She forced her way through using willpower alone. So I started by asking her, where did that first spark come from?
Growing up, I had always wanted to work in the fashion industry, and I thought from early days, oh, I'll be a fashion editor. And so I had applied to magazines to try and work just for free in the closet. Back then, you could actually work for free and organize somebody's closet, and that was where I thought it should all start. And so from there, you would work your way up, and I would eventually be Anna Wintour and be leading Vogue and all of Condé Nast. And that dream, I'm sure a lot of little girls had, and it didn't become a reality for me. And so I looked at other alternatives and windows and doors that I could jump through to participate in this industry that I loved. And before starting RewardStyle, my most recent gig was personal shopping. And so with personal shopping, I would have local clients who maybe would be going on vacation. And I would go around town and collect items from maybe five different stores, all in their size, bring it into their home, style them. Anything that they kept, I would get a commission on. And then I'd go back around town, return all the items they didn't work, and then try and collect my commission check. And I did love doing that. It was really manual offline work. But I started an online website to market that business. What I found was that the customers I was serving really were time poor, and that's why they booked me in the first place.
Right.
And my blog just allowed them to spend even less time with me to get what they needed. And so they started buying things from my website where I didn't earn a commission online.
So basically, your first business, you're this personal shopper, and I can tell, I guarantee you're really good at it because I'm looking at you now and you're definitely decked out and I know it's Fashion Week here in New York, but like, so people really loved you. And then you start this blog and website and you start telling people, instead of going to them and getting paid as a personal shopper, you start writing on your blog, hey, this is what you should get. This is what you should buy. So you figure out, hey, that's great. People are reading this, but all of a sudden you're cut out.
Completely.
So then what do you do?
So I was dating my boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband, was an engineer. And so he saw what I was going through and he was like, you seem to really love blogging, but obviously you've cut yourself out of your business.
Right.
Do you want to try and find a solution to make money online? And what we ultimately did was we just took exactly what was happening offline and moved that online. So RewardStyle is the digital version of a really old school offline model of a commission on sales where you're helping customers find the right things and helping them get styled.
Sure. Which is what retail is. And I'm sure retailers, they understand that from a sales perspective, you help sell something, you get a commission. So it was really, at that time, you see this mega opportunity, it sounds like, to build a business.
You know, I think the mega opportunity I saw was to hopefully move out of my dad's house.
It's always the best, the first. And, you know, it's so amazing what drives people for like their first, like, need or want, and that, okay, so that drove you initially.
Completely. And so people often ask, so you saw this, you know, like you said, this huge industry and you went to go tackle it. And I was like, no, I was 22 years old. I didn't want to live at my dad's house anymore. I just got cut out of my own business. I wasn't working in magazines.
Right.
What was next? And people often ask too, like, was it, you know, like gut wrenching to totally step away from what you're doing to make this work? And it's not a sexy answer. I'd say that the answer is no, because there weren't really many other options.
Sure.
I think I had like $435 in my bank account.
Right.
And I really needed to figure this out. And so we set forth creating reward style, and we started going around to retailers and asking, hey, I have this offline relationship with you. Will you honor that online? And at the time, you know, this is really 2010 is when we started building out reward style. 2011, we actually launched. At the time, blogging was not really an industry yet.
Yeah.
It was, especially domestically here in the US, it was something that a group of really weird girls did. They took pictures
sure,
of themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
They talked online.
Well, there's no Instagram, right? Instagram was just
no
starting.
Instagram.
Right.
Yeah.
So this was what people did.
Exactly. They put pictures of themselves online, and it was all a passion play, really. I thought I had a website. I thought I had a marketing website.
Right.
And I went to another website that was called Who What Wear, and they posted once a day, and it was a fashion website. I had no idea we were all bloggers. I just thought that there was some websites online that we went to. And for context too, a lot of people didn't yet have e-commerce. Vogue didn't even have .com. This
amazing.
Was really early days of content living online.
That's amazing. It's funny to think back, because when I think back, like, that wasn't that long ago. We're in 2019, like, you're only talking 9 years. And I think that takes us to, like, you and that business, because while you were starting this, technology was completely different. But it seems like you hit upon a great time with the emergence of social media. So you're working with your boyfriend, which is incredible. That I once tried working with my wife and it literally lasted like 30 minutes. Like, we were going to start a business. And so I admire you, because that was your boyfriend, is now your husband. You guys still are partners. But going back to the beginning and the change of technology, what happens when you do start this and you start going to retailers and you start building out your platform? Is it easily accepted? And how does the business grow?
Not easily accepted. I really fought tooth and nail to get in any door that I could. And at the time, you know, LinkedIn wasn't also widely adopted. So that wasn't a great resource that I could use. And so the way I went about it was I asked everyone I knew who they knew that worked in fashion, and whether it was like their cousin's uncle's roommate, like any way I could get to somebody who worked at Neiman Marcus,
right,
who worked at Net-a-Porter, who worked at Shopbop. And I jokingly say that I threw my body at cars, but I pretty much did that. And I was,
hey,
I was really
entrepreneurs,
persistent.
They know, listening to this show and understanding like what you have to do. And I know you're kind of joking about that, but I'm sure there's some truth to it.
All dignity is thrown out the window. And I would finally, you know, get into these doors and someone would be kind enough to give me 15 minutes of their time. And they would try to explain to me softly that the subculture that I was a part of was not really a widely acceptable group of people. So at the time, blogging, first of all, that was not a word used in common vernacular.
Right.
If people knew what it was not socially acceptable. And it was definitely not someone that at a fashion brand, whether you're luxury or high
right.
street, wanted to identify with. You wanted
sure.
to identify with the Condé Nast, the Hearst, the E! News, the celebrities.
Not some person writing some blog that's saying, hey, I want to wear this or I wear this, but how wrong they were.
Right. And can you imagine during your workday, you know, at the time I think about these men and women who are working in marketing and they're thinking, you want me to spend even 30 minutes emailing with this one blogger who I'm supposed to be doing some work with? And then what am I going to do? Show my boss I paid this weird girl that takes the pictures
yeah.
in the alley in front of her garage door that she's talking about my luxury product. And so, no, it was not exciting for a lot of people. And but I did have some breakthroughs. And
now, did you know in your, like at that point, because it was very hard for most people to be able to see what was going to happen. And many entrepreneurs are visionaries. At that point, when seeing bloggers and writing, did you really know that that was the wave of the future and that was how most people were going to start doing business and purchasing items by seeing it on social media? Or did you have any idea at that time?
Social media really wasn't even a part of it. It was, at the time, it was all blogs.
Right.
And you used Facebook and Twitter to drive to it. But I think what I believed was I knew that there was such thing as sales associates in stores. I'd been one for many years. And I knew personal shopping. And I knew how much these personal shoppers were making and how much they were selling. And then also seeing it taken out from underneath me with my own business, all those dollars that used to flow in store into bricks were now clicks. So I knew that it was real and that it was happening, and now able to back up and kind of take a look at what that was. I guess it was intuitive. I really truly believed that what we were doing was providing value to these stores. I didn't know at the time how big it would become or how dominant of a source of traffic and retail sales right. that bloggers or that reward style would ultimately end up being.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I think one thing that I noticed about you, it seems like, especially in this day and age with a lot of influencers and bloggers, and the one thing that I think, and you tell me, probably helped you is you seem to have had like a ton of experience working jobs, whether you were selling, whether you're a personal shopper, what those things enabled you, it sounds like, to see where the real opportunities were to make money.
Completely. Growing up, I had always started these little entrepreneurial endeavors, whether that was in elementary school, charging my friends to paint their fingernails in my bedroom, or making mini skirts in high school, and then jewelry. And so I'd always had an entrepreneurial eye and just been willing to work hard. So I remember when I went to college, my dad said the summer before college, he said, you can either go to school or you can go to work. And, you know, around my house, idle hands were not acceptable. And so I decided that I wanted to go to work. And so my first real job was going into the store that I so admired their products and wanted to be around those products, and were things that, you know, my family could never afford. And when I went in and asked him if he knew of someone like him that owned a store like his that I could potentially work at, and he gave me the opportunity, I was thrilled, and I was there day and night. And it was, you know, it was a mom and pop shop, and the husband loved to trade stocks in the back, and the wife loved to not be at the shop. And so it gave me free reign. I was the only one who worked there. And so it was these beautiful clothing, and I could organize the stores I liked. And I would come pitch the owners, hey, there's this cool new brand everyone's talking about, we should go get it. And I was in school for PR during college. And so I was like, let me put together a press kit for the store. I'll then use that press kit to go out to these brands and tell them why they need to be here. I mean, I was applying everything I was learning because this was my playground with no risk, you know?
Yeah, you were getting to be an entrepreneur and build a business without having any risk. And you had that passion and energy. But, you know, the one thing is, in looking at it as an entrepreneur myself, is a lot of people are presented with opportunities like that. But then it's taking the initiative for you not to just sit there and be a store clerk, but do PR to get excited. And it sounds like that is that personality drive of yours has really helped build what today is over $1 billion in revenue, which is incredible. Like when you think of that number and the amount of employees you have, several hundred, and offices, and you're relatively young. I know you're young. How does that, coming from growing up and, you know, like you said, in your father's house and having to work, but like, did you ever expect this type of success this young?
I wouldn't say that I did, because I think when I look back at the way I approached everything, was I knew what I loved. I loved fashion. I wanted to be around clothes. I wanted to dress people. And I gave a lot of discretionary effort to everything. And you hit on that, which was I was a store clerk. I could have very easily checked in, checked out, make sure the clothes are steamed and hung on the rack. And instead, I re-merchandised the store. I was encouraging them around PR, bringing new brands in. And I think it's just taking advantage of these opportunities. I've had people come to me and say, well, I'm just not learning in my job anymore. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? What other projects are you picking up? Like, what are opportunities do you see that you're not tackling?
They're just waiting for something to be handed to them and tell someone to show them the way. And
I think one of the important things too that I learned through my working was that I really didn't know where I wanted to end up, but I knew it was fashion. And so I went and worked in LA, and I thought that I wanted to be the next Rachel Zoe, which I still admire Rachel. But I went out there and I did the schlepping for months and months of the clothes and bringing them to clients' homes. And I realized that that wasn't for me, but I then understood that industry out there, as it were. And then I went to New York the next summer, and I worked in wholesale, and I got to see that side of the luxury clothing business and the people actually making the clothes. And then they were the ones deciding which stores they then sold to, and kind of seeing what drives them and what sort of metrics they're looking at. And working in PR and then having my own line and then being a blogger myself, it gave me a peek into all sides of the true business of fashion. And so when we approached different people, when I approached influencers, I was able to speak to them from my own experience and say, hey, free clothes and invitations to parties don't pay rent. And it was like, yeah, they don't. And then you immediately get someone like, oh, you get me. And then it's like, hey, I've got an answer for you. And so it's buy-in on the problem before the solution. And then same thing with the retailers. I understood what they were getting at and how they were going to hit their goals and get their bonuses. And I think when you understand what drives people, you're able to create solutions that are, you know, we jokingly say reward style is a quad win, but it is. And it's that the retailers want sales. We, you know, our influencers then compensated when they drive sales. Reward style is compensated when we help our influencers drive sales. And so we're then incentivized to create better better products that helped consumers shop more easily. And it's like this, just this flywheel that keeps spinning. And then now with the, there's more pieces of the business, but we all win together.
Yeah.
And I think that that comes from my early experience of working on all sides and understanding how can everybody win together and all.
Yeah, it's no doubt. I mean, for me, it's pretty easy to see it. It comes from you being motivated enough to jump in and just like that first opportunity you got at that store to take advantage of learning all these different roles. And then when you go out and build your own company, you know how to speak to each of these people. And obviously you have to be able to communicate that because there's people who understand it, but then can't communicate it to each of these parties. And it sounds like you did that. So going back and looking at those early days, how did you end up going from 2010 and 11 and 12 into, take me through those next steps of the real growth?
So we opened the office June 1st of 2011. We hired an assistant and an engineer, and it was myself. And I secretly lived in the office because that was my way out of my dad's house.
Well, you did it.
Yeah,
you could have folded up tent right there and you would have been fine, right?
I did. I slept on the futon and no one knew it. And I, in the morning, got up before everybody got there and I hid the sheets away so that no one knew that I was staying there. And I was working late anyway, so I was practically living there just at my desk. But we were working just around the clock. And I remember maybe by the end of that year, coming to my boyfriend and saying, hey, this is fun and this is cool and feeds my soul in this one way, but mm-hmm. also our relationship is non-existent.
Right.
And I wanted a boyfriend. I didn't want a business. And so this is not going to continue to work. And I remember that Baxter would always somehow string me along is the not nice way to say that.
Right.
Just to kind of keep going, like change the subject essentially. Yeah. And so for the first several years, it was very frustrating to me because whatever I did, I was going to give my best effort and I was going to do things that I really loved. And, you know, we've had even conversations since, and I was like, you know, I was happy also working at the store. Like I was doing all the things and I felt fulfilled and then I had great relationships. And I think something that's hard about entrepreneurship is the emotional toll of entrepreneurship, the way that it separates you from people. And so you spoke about your own exit. And I think something that I'm trying to do even prior to an exit for myself is really find time for human relationships again, because yeah. I've found that that's something that can just dissolve as you get deeper and deeper into your business, because you can't make friends with your coworkers. And then your previous peer group is likely not experiencing the sorts of things that you're going through. And then you can't tell other people what you're going through because you don't want them to know all the things that you're going through.
Exactly. It's so hard, you know, to reminding me of those days and having my own businesses. And it's very lonely. And you hear that a lot. Like it's lonely when you're running a business because everyone who's within the organization and under you, it's a relationship that is kind of work first, because that's where you're spending all your hours. And it's very, very difficult to navigate. And throw on top of that a situation where you have a husband in the business and then start a family, right? And I could only imagine how difficult. And for you to have the insight so young, that's so great, like in terms of realizing like what's important. So I admire that. And going back to the business, because we've got to talk about this business because it's such an incredible business and you've built it into, as I said, a $1 billion business in a short period of time, which I am amazed. It's incredible. What happens where all of a sudden, because you go from that early days, what are the next big steps?
So for the first 4 years of the business, I was pretty much on the road, both explaining to influencers that they could make money doing what they're doing. At the time, they were called bloggers. And then also, that was half my day. And then the other half of my days was going into retailers and educating them that there was this group of people that could be meaningful for their business. And so it was just trying to recruit brands. And until 2015, that was my focus. I also, 2015, we raised our first round. And so Baxter didn't have a technology network. I did not have a
Baxter's
fashion
your
network.
Husband, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and co-founder. And so neither one of us had a network and we didn't know any different. And
right.
so we didn't even know that we didn't have a network.
Right.
And by the time that we went out to raise money, we had no idea what we were doing.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. I got to tell you about this cool show I discovered called Small Business Revolution Main Street. It's a business makeover show with tons of awesome advice. What I loved about it is they do it all with heart, not the hyped up drama of those other shows I've seen. Ty Pennington, the renovation guy, is on it, and Amanda Brinkman, the marketing guru from Deluxe. Definitely check it out. You can watch it on Hulu, Prime Video, or smallbusinessrevolution.org. And our next sponsor. Have you been feeling stuck? like you've hit that glass ceiling. Well, earning an MBA could be the thing to help you get moving. I know, over my career, I've witnessed countless times where those who have had MBAs were given the best opportunities within the workplace, simply because they had an MBA. And I'm here to tell you, earning your MBA is easier than ever, thanks to Ashford University. Why an MBA? For over a century, Forbes has been one of the top names in business. By partnering with Ashford University, they have built an incredible online MBA program that helps prepare students to become leaders in business. The Forbes School of Business and Technology is led by a faculty of practicing business professionals who bring their years of experience to the classroom. Course features. Ashford University's MBA courses are created to help you rise among the rankings of other business professionals. You'll learn by doing. Courses led by industry experts use interactive business simulations and innovative strategies such as gamification to enhance your learning experience. Steve Forbes himself gives valuable insight throughout the program. Convenient and flexible, Ashford University's online MBA program allows you to learn at your own pace. Their six-week courses allow you to take one course at a time. No standardized tests required. The GRE, GMAT, and other standardized test scores are not required for enrolling at Ashford University. Accreditation. Ashford University is fully accredited by WASC Senior College and University Commission. Get on the road to earning your MBA the Forbes way with Ashford University. Go to ashford.edu/HSH. That's ashford.edu/HSH to start today. ashford.edu/HSH. And we're back. Yeah, had you, why did you need money? Did you need money for technology or what was the driver?
So we had grown the business really carefully and always, and completely bootstrapped. And by 2015, we realized we have so many ideas and we need to move faster on these because we have this head start advantage, but these are advantages that will slowly disappear.
Sure.
And so the time is right to do this. And I would say since that point, there's been so many things that we've been dying to do, whether it's with the information that we have, the performance data,
the network of the retailers, the network of the influencers.
Yeah. It's incredible and exciting. And I was like, we can't wait any longer. And so we went out to try and raise money. And I, you know, one of the funny stories about that was we did ultimately end up raising what I would consider a small round, given how large we were at the time, but control of the company was very important to us. We raised about $13 million. And actually the investor who did ultimately end up taking a chance on us.
Lucky person. Yeah. that's great. That's like hitting the lottery. But anyway, so.
When we arrived, his secretary said, hey, the guy brought his wife.
Smart guy.
Yeah. Which is pretty funny because after the meeting, the investor has since told me, he's like, yeah, what I realized in that meeting was the wife brought her husband. Which I thought was a nice compliment because honestly, Baxter and I are very much a team, but it's just funny, you know, fundraising. And what they didn't know actually at the time too, was I was newly pregnant and I was like, if they would have only known, this is like Mary and Joseph, you know, searching for a home. But, so we raised that round and it was also that year that South by Southwest got in touch and they asked for me to give a keynote to explain what the influencer industry was and what we were doing. And that was, on the first day of Interactive, it was after President Obama spoke and it was
a pretty tough
really
act to
exciting. Yes.
It's like, okay, you're going to go speak in and you're following Obama.
Yeah. It was really exciting. I think more exciting than I even knew. I was thrilled that they had identified us as somebody who is relevant. Yeah. But then also that was the point where I didn't anymore have to go out and beg people to give us a chance.
Explain,
after that,
right.
We started seeing inbound. And so I would say my travel cut down as far as like going out and trying to get these retailers and influencers. But what changed is at that point, I actually really thought that acceptance was within and like kind of this outside validation was really important to me. And I thought important to the industry and bloggers, all the press articles at the time where bloggers are banned from Fashion Week. They're horrible. It was just like a really dirty, I mean, and even abroad, I mean, even still the press abroad loves to write scathing stories about bloggers and influencers and how horrible they are. And I thought that I was going to go on this campaign to make blogging legitimate. And so I looked for partnerships with the CFDA. I brought in strategic the Council of Fashion Designers of America.
Okay.
And so they ran Fashion Week.
Right.
And I thought, okay, if we have a partnership with them, then that is validation and it shows acceptance and that we're a part of this industry. And then I brought on some strategic investors. So at the time there was, you know, the Street Style star at the time,
sure,
that was the big deal. We brought her on as a strategic and I thought, here we go. Now people who are important are talking about us. And what I found was that that actually didn't matter. But I would say maybe it was just a lesson learned, but I did spend probably a year chasing validation. And what I have found is that the moment I kind of gave up on that and we were still performing, we're now such a material part of retailers' traffic and sales that that's what's validating. And that's, I think the dollars flowing into the industry are what's validating. And there wasn't going to be a way I was going to manufacture it.
No, I think at the end of the day, it's like dollars talk and whatever people want to say or critic. Or, you know, everyone can tear you down and it really upset you. And obviously this was your business and you were creating something. And maybe it sounds like you realized internally that, more importantly from yourself, that this is valuable. And obviously from a business standpoint, people take it serious now. And if they don't, that's pretty stupid. It's just like, as so many things happen over hundreds of years and things change, it's like you eventually get on board or you're left behind. And it's so many people now are getting on board that this is the new way to sell. This is the new way to market. There's individuals and who are influencing. It's not all about commercials and advertising, which to me is less of a way to market more authentically. Now, at least it's people who are marketing for things they love in most cases. So you have a network of these people. There's now, for the business today, how many influencers are part of this network? How many brands do you represent, retailers? Tell me how it all works in that marketplace.
So today we've come a long way. And part of that was just looking at how do we future-proof this industry? Because it wasn't always just going to be blogging, because then came Instagram and then came Snap and we know something will be next. And so we started really investing in tools that have brought us to where we are today. And so we have a three-sided marketplace. We have our 50,000 influencers today. We are invitation only. We've had hundreds of thousands of applications, if not a million by now.
That's amazing. Now, an influencer, how do you categorize that? Is that a certain amount of followers? Is it what? How do you?
There's definitely different levels of qualification. So our business intelligence team has helped us to kind of identify a matrix that can be a better predictor for us of success. You can almost think of Reward Style as an incubator for influencers, because they have to have a level of success coming into the platform. And then we are then saying, you're investable. And we're going to give you these resources, this technology, these relationships, and this consulting. And actually, we're now going to bring consumers to your doorstep with our consumer property. And so it has become kind of this vortex for influencers. It's really exciting. We're now able to kind of make and grow stars. And so
yeah, exactly.
That's the one side of the business, on the influencer side. And with each new platform and each new vertical, that's growth for us. And so we have people who started with us as pinners that are now like to know it. It'll vary, you know, your dominant platform will vary over time. But I look at it in the same way as I think people from the outside, it's easy to say, oh, they're an Instagrammer or they're a YouTuber. And what I would say is an actor would never say, I'm a DVD or I'm a VHS. I think the distribution channel will continue to change and evolve. And they're just fantastic creators that know how to build and engage communities.
Exactly.
And that just might be their dominant platform today. But then you move over to the brand side.
Okay.
And so on the brand side, there's 4,500 retailers that are integrated into our platform. And so what that means is they are in relationship with us, and to where we together track what happens when our influencers talk about anything of theirs, whether that's across social media or their own channels. And we then, anytime a transaction occurs after the promotion, we're then billing the retailer, we're paying the influencer. And so there's the 4,500 that do the commission on sales. And really,
there's our 4,500 retailers. Okay, so that are part and registered and part of your platform.
So it's everybody from, they can sell everything from a MacBook computer to pool cleaner from Amazon to balloons from Etsy and Gucci belts. And literally all of those brands are on board, which is important because the influencer can truly talk about whatever they want. If I want to talk about my new favorite flat screen TV, I can do that. If I want to talk about the dress I got on sale at ASOS, I can also do that.
It's unlimited.
It's unlimited, which is important for authenticity. And then we have hundreds of brands that then invest with us further in branded content. And so those are the retailers and brands that come to us and we plug into their marketing calendar. We help them to spin up the right influencers at the right time, talking about the right products. And that has now actually become 50% of our business. So that's another huge arm. And we've just now reorganized around a GM structure structure around those two sides. So the commission on sales business and the collaborations business. And then kind of the third thing that has really become really important to us is our consumer app. So we have a consumer shopping app that's called Like to Know It.
Right.
And consumers are able to go there, shop in the context of real people's lives. They choose who they follow. They can search for products. Maybe somebody wants a double stroller.
Right.
They can go in and search that. They can see all the influencers, their double strollers, what they've said about those, where to get those, all the sale codes, information. So to me, it's revolutionizing retail because you're shopping in the context of a real person's life that has a real body type, real parameters, real budgets, real houses. So it's just a better way to shop. And within that product this year, people will buy $450 million worth of product.
Wow.
Through
within
the app.
That app, $450
exactly.
million dollars
yes.
worth of product.
Correct. Yeah. And so for our influencers, you know, a way that I measure our success, because our mission is to make our influencers as economically successful as possible. And to me, that's just qualifying the value that they're adding to the ecosystem. And so for some influencers, that might be zero. They're creating beautiful content, but no one's doing anything with it. They're not buying it. Others, it's millions of dollars. And so we, by the end of this year, we'll have 80 reward style millionaires, which is really exciting for me.
That's
because
incredible.
On the street, you see people are like, hey, who's a millionaire influencer? And people can usually name like three.
Yeah.
And with us, it's, you know, it's the girl in Kansas City. It's the girl in Tulsa. It's the girl in a suburb of Dallas. And it's these women everywhere who have, we've now been able to quantify the value that they add. And they look different than the industry used to look. It's a carpool mom. Like
right.
who thought
it's more
that
real,
she was
going to real totally... people who aren't just set up. Where I think a lot of people have this perception of influencers as back in the day of like kind of phony, like good looking, like limited clothing, like fitness. I mean, that's what I think. And our people are like, why are people following? But it sounds like what you've really created are people who actually have real passions, real knowledge, and are sharing that on your platform.
I would equate it to, I think today we are a nation of niche. And why influencers works today is because I know you can't see me today listening in, but I am 5'9", super pale, red hair, have three kids. So like little mom bod. And
I would not say that.
She's well.
she's very modest. I'll be honest. I could give you like, she looks like she's walking the runway today. Okay. I know she's saying that, but like, yes, she's a mom, but anyway, go ahead.
But the reason I mention that is because the people who follow me are likely, I know from the people who comment and the questions that they ask, they're also pale. They might have my same coloring. They might
right.
also be tall. But people know when I wear jeans that I can bend over in those jeans because I'm picking up a one-year-old child in those jeans. And so
right.
there's this nuance to the things that I'm showing that it's not just that they look nice, but they know my life and my lifestyle and what I need to be able to do in those things. And so
it's authentic.
It's totally authentic. And so me looking nice in an outfit is not just an advertisement on the side of a building. There's so much nuance that my audience understands. And the reason I mention this nation of niche is because it's sort of this Netflix effect where somebody logs in and their experience in Like to Know It app is completely different from someone else's, but it's totally tailored to them and their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And maybe they're a working mom. So 30% of their feed is all just workwear influencers they follow or mommy influencers that are showing their kids and what they're wearing to school. And those are all things that are relevant to them. And so they're able to buy the right things at the right time from people that they've pre-selected. And so they're not being sold to. They've opted into something to say, hey, be my guide, be the guide for my life. Help me to be the hero. So I have the cutest kid at school. So I look great at work. And I actually am not spending hours walking around a mall or hours browsing online. You know, today you go to a retailer and some of the best in the world have what, millions of products. And so
yeah.
I can go to somebody and I can say, okay, great. I want mini dresses under 500 and there's 20 pages for me to sort through. And then what shoes do I wear with it? And what headband and what's cool? And we just simplify all that for people. And that's why it's working. And what's cool about that is not only is it better for the consumer, but you now have a mobilized workforce. There's 50,000 women out there that are now providing for themselves and their family just by being a resource to their communities.
Yeah, that's great. It's really incredible. And as you explain it and understanding what's happening and how things are changing so much in today's, you know, world. And you guys are definitely, I mean, you have your hand on the pulse and have had for 10 years. And, you know, I want to ask you about, you know, you deal with a lot of influencers and that side of the business. And like you said, you're getting like, what does it take in terms of a lot of people today, they want to be an influencer, I think, because they see they'll have a lot of likes and they can make money. As a person who knows this inside and out, how do you, are they entrepreneurs? How do they go about things? Like, are the people who just want to be famous? Like, what's the key to success for being an influencer?
It's a true commitment. It's just like any other industry where you say, this is what I am going to do. And I'm going to wake up every day and I'm going to create content. I mean, what you don't see behind what's happening within influencer is content doesn't just happen. And that's why not everyone is just an influencer. I mean, an organic looking content that's documenting you throughout the day, there's a lot of thought and planning that goes into this. And so there's articles about people who've tried to be an influencer before and they're like, I can't do it. I can't cut it. And I will tell you, it is a tough gig. And these are people who, like I said, yeah, they're dedicated to it. This is their business. And so they're treating it as such and they're growing it as such. And they understand that there's investment required. There's team required. A lot of what I talk about on our podcast, it's called Influencer Radio, is really we dive into the lives of these influencers, kind of who they were before they came to influence. So you kind of understand how they're credentialed or not.
Sure.
And then what it takes today. And all of them none of them are doing it alone. And even the girl who's sitting talking on her stories all day, talking about whatever, her husband is her full-time whatever. Yeah. He's running the analytics. He's making sure the checks are coming in on time. He's taking the photos. He's running returns. I mean, there is always a team behind these influencers. And it, in a lot of cases, is a family business. But I think it's just they're investing in it. They're giving it a chance to succeed. They're being patient with it. And they're just creating content that's very relevant and authentic and I think touches people's lives. And consumers better than ever can now sniff out inauthentic content.
Right. And I think that's exactly why, as we look at it and thinking to like just general advertising, to me, it's like so archaic to think about that, right? I'm sure for you. But like when you look at that and you really want authenticity and you can follow or find out information or things from people who you deem authentic, I mean, that's the golden key for advertisers for what they want. And I guess with these influencers and knowing so many of them, does personality play into it too? Is there a salesmanship to it as well? Or
totally. Yeah. And I say we do have men on our platform. It's just by and large women. And I would say that they are salespeople, but they're also just great humans that people relate to. And I would say it's much like, I hate to say reality TV, but sometimes the best stars on reality TV, people are just like, I get you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
so
you
true.
Say crazy shit, but I think same thing too. And that's the influencers. I think in Dallas, Charlotte Jones is a businesswoman in our community. And she once told me that she was like, if people love the Cowboys, I don't have to sell the jersey.
Is she Jerry
and
Jones?
She's Jerry Jones'
wife.
Daughter. Yeah. Yes.
Right.
And so she runs the whole brand side of the business. And, you know, it's the most valuable sports team, you would know. In the entire world right now.
Well, them and the Yankees.
Okay. Well, the Cowboys
and maybe Manchester,
brand.
But the Cowboys brand is incredible. I'm not a Giants fan, so I don't hate on the Cowboys. Yeah. I'm a Jets fan, unfortunately.
The incredible part about the Cowboys is they don't play well on the field, but they still have a massively valuable brand. And I hear what she's saying with, if they love the Cowboys, I don't have to sell the jersey. And I think that's the same thing with the influencer. If I trust Laura, then Laura doesn't have to tell me that she prefers Huggies or whatever, you know, or this brand. Like I trust her. I love her. So when she says that's what she's putting on her face, I'll put it on my face.
Yeah. It's almost counterproductive to say, go buy this, go do this. And like, that's a great point. And obviously a reason that your business has done well. Question on you said most of the influencers, most of the people are women. Like what percentage and why is that? And do guys have, is there a role? Like I'd like to become an influencer myself. And that's
completely. And it's probably 90% female.
Wow.
And at least within our orbit.
Was that because it's more, but you're in fashion and lifestyle, but you're other.
We started in fashion. We then moved into home and then beauty and then fitness and broader lifestyle. Today you can buy vodka through our app. We have deals with hotel chains. Like we do a lot and we've expanded. And actually 2 years ago we were over 90% fashion. Today we're just over 60% fashion. And so reward style has been expanding and we plan to continue that. But I think broadly what you see in the market is that influence started early with girls keeping journals online and then showing pictures of the things that they loved online. And now it is, consumers are spending 6.5 hours a day on their phone. They're spending 90% of that time inside of apps. And so even for guys, you know, my husband's sending me all the time posts that people have shown where they're traveling. He's being influenced by where maybe it's his friends or maybe it's a hotel group that's showing their new hotel. But we are influenced by what we see on our phone. And it's becoming completely ubiquitous that you would, of course, be inspired by something that you see from somebody else.
Sure.
And so because of that, I think, remember when the term like metro was a popular term?
Yeah.
And so like
10 years ago.
Like 10 years ago, yeah. Yeah. And it was like, that was like,
this Queer Eye for
like,
whatever show, like the Metro guy. Yes.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, if he's trendy, he's Metro.
Right.
And now like, you don't use that word anymore because like, you just appreciate that guys take care of themselves and trim their fingernails and dress well, you know? And so I think culture has changed and that with it will, and also the way that we discover things has changed. And so I think some of the savviest influencers now, their husbands are influencers themselves. Mm. And so, you know, I'll give you an example of like HelloFashion blog and she has over 1 million followers. Her husband has several hundred 100,000 now. And she was like, I saw that whenever I posted Cody, people would ask questions about what he was wearing and what he was doing. So we just started him his own site. And now it's just for dudes. And he's a dad. He lives in Utah and they travel and do cool stuff, but he's just doing dude things over on his Instagram. So, and he's an influencer himself. And what I'll say is the brand dollars are there. The brands are there. They're ready to spend with male influencers.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it's a wide open opportunity for guys to enter the market and fill a void.
Yeah. And is there any data or their analytics you've run, like the amount of followers you have equals a certain dollar amount, or what are the metrics?
Yeah. So you look at these platforms and there is intent within them. And so for example, someone's Instagram follower is going to be exponentially less valuable than their like to know it follow by nature of the intent of the platform. People might be following you on your Instagram because they're interested in your XYZ thing that you often show, but they're not interested in actually buying anything from you. And so there's a million reasons why people like photos, why people follow other people. Doesn't mean purchase intent, but then you pull that over into Like to Know It, and the Like to Know It app is a shopping app. And so when people go into that app and they follow you, that means I like your style. I intend to buy things that you are showing me, because that's
exactly
what you do there.
That's what you're following.
And so in that context, following count does matter, because that's the audience that you're then able to reach. On other platforms, it's less of an impact. But what I will say is, there's still value to having reach, of course. You think about just impressions and just brands paying for reach or paying for brand association.
Yeah.
But more and more brands are actually just paying for they're looking at the historical performance data of that influencer. One of our, you know, reward style millionaires has 30,000 Instagram followers. No one would have ever thought.
Is that because they're so specific to a certain niche?
Completely. Right. And so with this one person, I swear everyone in her town must follow her and buy from her, because I don't know how you do it with 30,000 followers, but she does. And it's a very specific style, and her community must really relate to her.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love it. Just in the little time we have and wrapping up, this has been so great, so informative. I've learned so much. Where do you go? Where's the business going for people who aren't in it every day like myself and seeing where the trends are? What are the big trends, and where are you going to take this business in the next couple of years?
So we have a big vision. I think we're swinging for the fences with reward style and with Like to Know It. And the great thing is we did have a running head start for so many years before influencer even became a word. And so the things that I want to do are ambitious. And in the last 2 years, we've now hired an executive team. And so Baxter and I were directly managing the business prior to that. And so about 10 new VPs, we have two GMs, we have a new CFO. We're prepared to take on these challenges. And so I think the things that you'll start to see from us is we are expanding our reward style collaborations business, so that in the future, whether you're running a restaurant or a dry cleaner or launching a new brand, you'll be able to access the information about influencers in order to cast and work with them at scale in a really turnkey manner. And so that will be coming out next year. On the Like to Know It side, today it's a very intent-driven platform. So you come in, you're buying a sweater today and you check out with it. We're expanding into what I call purchase planning. And so when people are redoing their bedrooms, they're getting ready for a bachelorette party, and they're sourcing that inspiration to then later go shopping. We'll be expanding the product there. And then I think also into product. I think that's a natural expansion for some of our influencers, and we'll be a part of that story for them. Largely for consumers, I believe that we are revolutionizing retail. You look at, you know, the retail stores that I used to work in, and it mattered what candle we had burning, and because that set an ambiance and who was in the store helping people shop. And then you transform to the digital days, and I swear someone got in a room and said, let's put all of our products in a grid on a page, go. And it's so just the polar opposite of what a bricks mortar experience was.
Yeah.
And so I don't even understand how it's worked, to be totally honest with you.
As much guidance as people need. I mean, we're in an experience economy, and it's interesting. It's we'll look back years. You're looking back already, and it's kind of like archaic when you look at, like, why would you think people are going to buy? But it's got to be about, like, formulating both bricks and mortar and digital and making it an overall experience. And it sounds like you're on to that.
Yeah. I just think that being able to shop in a way that's so personalized to you across thousands of retailers, hundreds of millions of brands, that's like totally curated down to you and your experiences, and shopping in the context of someone's real life. So for example, I love coffee table books. Mm-hmm. I love that when I buy a coffee table book off of Like to Know It, I can see how the entire coffee table is styled. So I know what to do when it shows up at my house, instead of like twisting it different ways and trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do with it. So it makes you the hero of your own life, and allows you to focus on the things that you care about instead of trying to make the things that you've bought for yourself look nice.
Yeah, no, it all makes sense. And I can't wait to hear more. I mean, you guys are doing so well, and I only can imagine you're going to get bigger and better. And I don't think anyone's questioning influencers anymore.
Definitely not. And I'll say congratulations to the guys at Revolve, who, you know, had a fantastic IPO based purely on influencer marketing as a low cost of acquisition that allows you to exceed other retailers in the business at a time when so many retailers are filing for bankruptcy and they had a phenomenal showing. And I think that that gave confidence to other retailers to say, okay, this is no longer a tactic for us. It has to be a strategy, which is a great tailwind for this industry and for influencers to further be able to grow their businesses and wealth for their families.
Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.